So imagine you are lying inside an fMRI scanner, right? It's loud, it's totally claustrophobic, and you are just terrified.
Oh, absolutely. And if we look at the brain imaging in real time there, the fear center of your brain, your amygdala, it's basically lighting up like a Christmas tree.
Right, your nervous system is just screaming that you are in danger.
Exactly.
But instead of taking a prescribed medication to calm down, you simply take your fingertips and begin tapping a specific sequence on your collarbone.
And under your eyes and on your chin.
Yeah, and within minutes, the brain scans literally show your amygdala completely powering down.
I mean, it sounds a bit like a party trick, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But what you are describing is an observable, repeatable physiological shift.
Yeah.
We are talking about mechanisms that actively alter the human stress response, completely without pharmaceuticals.
And that is exactly what we are digging into today. So welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Our mission for you, the listener, is to basically cut straight through the woo-woo stereotypes surrounding alternative therapies.
Because there are a lot of them.
Oh, heaps. We know that things like tapping on your face or having a practitioner hover their hands near your body, well, it sounds completely arbitrary.
It sounds a bit ridiculous to a lot of people, frankly.
Right. But if you are keen to get past the stigma and into the hard science, we are looking at a massive stack of clinical research today.
We are talking systematic reviews, meta-analyses, and rigorous trials.
Exactly, to see if these interventions actually hold up under the microscope.
And we are drawing primarily on two massive syntheses of research for this.
Yep.
The first is a sweeping 2022 systematic review published in Frontiers in Psychology. That one covers clinical EFT, which is widely known as tapping.
And the second one is a brand new 2024 meta-analysis from BMC Palliative Care.
Right. And that one looks specifically at the data behind Reiki.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we throw a bunch of efficacy statistics at you, we really need to understand what this actually
Yeah,
is.
and how it physically interacts with the body.
Right, because if a friend tells you they are, tapping their face to feel less anxious, it sounds like they are just distracting themselves.
It really does.
But clinical EFT isn't just random tapping, is it?
No, not at all. And that distinction is absolutely vital. Clinical EFT stands for Emotional Freedom Techniques.
Right.
And the clinical designation means it is a highly manualized, evidence-based program. It's fundamentally an integrated approach.
So it brings different things together.
Exactly. It takes established, traditional psychological methods, specifically cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, and prolonged exposure therapy.
And then adds the tapping.
Yes, it adds a somatic physical element using acupressure.
Okay, let's slow down and translate some of that clinical jargon for a second.
Sure.
When you say prolonged exposure therapy, what does that actually look like in the room for a patient?
Well, in traditional psychology, prolonged exposure means having a patient safely bring a traumatic memory or a severe anxiety trigger to mind.
You're kind of forcing yourself to look at it.
Spot on. You are exposing yourself to the thought on purpose so you can process it, rather than burying it or running away from it.
Okay.
So in clinical EFT, you pair that mental exposure with a cognitive reframing statement. You acknowledge the problem while affirming self-acceptance.
And then you introduce the somatic ingredient, the
Yes.
somatic ingredient being the physical touch, right? So instead of an acupuncturist using needles, you are using your own fingertips.
Precisely. You use your fingers to stimulate specific acupressure points on the face and torso.
Okay, got it.
And the underlying mechanism of why this physical touch matters, well, it's actually the most compelling part of the research.
Oh, absolutely.
Because when you bring that stressful memory to mind, your autonomic nervous system immediately spikes into a sympathetic state.
That's your classic fight or flight response.
Right. The hypothalamus in your brain sends an alarm to your pituitary gland.
Which then signals your adrenal glands to start pumping out stress hormones.
Exactly. We call that the HPA axis.
Right, the HPA axis.
So what the clinical data suggests is that the physical percussion, the tapping on these specific mechanoreceptors in the skin, it actively sends a calming signal.
Like a deactivating signal back up to the brain.
Yes, specifically targeting that HPA axis.
So we have the fMRI brain imaging studies from that systematic review, right? And those show that while the person is focusing on their phobia or their trauma, the tapping physically downregulates the amygdala.
Which is the fear center.
Yeah, I like to think of it as the brain's internal smoke detector,
Yeah.
and it also downregulates the hippocampus, which processes memory.
Right, but simultaneously, and this is key, It increases activity in the prefrontal cortex,
which is the logical executive control center.
Exactly, which creates an incredible paradox for the brain.
How do you mean?
Well, you are holding a terrifying thought, right?
Hmm.
But the physical signal coming from your body is saying, we are safe.
Oh, wow.
You are simultaneously unplugging the alarm bell while strengthening the part of the brain that assesses the environment logically.
I always try to visualize the autonomic nervous system's fear response like a frozen computer program.
That's a good way to look at it.
You know, when your screen completely locks up, the fans are whirring at maximum speed, and literally nothing you click makes a difference.
Oh, yeah. Incredibly frustrating.
Right. So the cognitive script you use in EFT is like identifying the specific software program that's frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And the physical tapping acts like a manual control alt delete override. It physically interrupts the hardware to force a reboot of the system.
That analogy actually maps quite well to the biochemistry we see in the trials, particularly when we look at the systemic effects on hormones.
Yeah, the hormone data is wild.
It really is. To really ground this in the biology, let's look at a landmark 2012 triple-blind randomized controlled trial.
Okay.
The researchers wanted to measure cortisol, which is our primary stress hormone.
Right.
They took 83 subjects and split them into three groups to see what would happen after just 50 minutes.
So they tested a single 50-minute session.
Just one session, yeah.
Did just taking an hour to relax do the trick, or did the tapping actually perform better?
It wasn't even close, honestly. The control group that simply rested and the group that received standard talk therapy both saw their cortisol levels drop by about 14%.
Okay, so that is the baseline benefit of simply sitting in a quiet room and talking through your feelings for an hour.
Exactly. But the group that received the 50 minutes of clinical EFT, they saw their cortisol plummet by 24%.
Wow. That is a massive physiological difference for a single hour of therapy.
It goes deeper than that, actually.
In
science, a single study is interesting, but replication is the gold standard.
Right. You have to prove it wasn't a fluke.
Spot on. So another research team later replicated that exact trial design, and they found an even larger systemic shift.
Wait, really? How much larger?
In the replication study, the EFT group's cortisol dropped by an astonishing 43%.
43%? That's huge.
It is. We are not talking about a subjective questionnaire where someone simply says they feel a bit calmer.
Right. We are measuring a rapid observable plunge in the chemical biomarkers of stress.
Exactly.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting, because I hear these numbers for a single trial and it sounds great.
Sure.
But my skeptical brain immediately thinks, was this just a fluke study with a great practitioner? How does this actually scale?
That's a very fair question.
Like, if we test this on thousands of people across different clinics, do the results hold up against the placebo effect?
The short answer is yes, robustly.
Okay.
The 2022 systematic review we are looking at identified 56 randomized controlled trials, or RCTs.
56.
Yeah, that encompasses over 2,000 participants.
Mm.
In the realm of psychological interventions, accumulating 56 RCTs provides a highly significant evidence base.
And if we look at the specific meta-analysis by Klond from 2016, which focused purely on anxiety, the numbers are wild.
They really are.
They analyzed 14 rigorous RCTs and calculated an effect size, which statisticians call a Cohen's D, of 1.23. Now, for you listening, if you don't read statistical papers every day, let's break that down. What does a 1.23 actually signify in this context?
Well, in behavioral and psychological research, an effect size of 0.2 is considered a small clinical effect.
Okay.
A 0.5 is moderate, and anything over 0.8 is considered a large effect.
Oh, wow.
So a Cohen's D of 1.23 is exceptionally massive. It basically means the average person receiving EFT was better off than the vast majority of people sitting in the control groups.
That is incredible. And it is crucial to note that these trials weren't just looking at minor workplace stress either.
Not at all.
They included combat veterans with severe PTSD, patients with fibromyalgia, and individuals with intense specific phobias.
Exactly. Real clinical severity.
But I do want to play devil's advocate here for a minute, because we promised to look at the honest limitations in the debates in this research.
Absolutely. We have to.
I have to bring up the famous sham tapping controversy.
Ah, yes. The wait and holder study.
Right. It was a highly publicized critical study. They compared EFT, to groups doing quote-unquote sham therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people tapped on random points on their arms or legs that were definitely not traditional acupressure points.
Right.
And another group literally just tapped on a plastic doll instead of themselves.
The literal doll, yes.
And the crazy thing is, those groups still saw improvements in their anxiety.
They did.
So if people get better by tapping on a doll, doesn't that just prove it's a giant psychological placebo? Doesn't it suggest the physical acupressure part is entirely useless?
This raises an important question, right? Mm. How do we scientifically separate the cognitive exposure, the talking, and the mental focus from the somatic physical touch?
Exactly.
It is completely true that the Wait and Holder study is frequently cited by critics to dismiss tapping.
Yeah, I've seen it brought up a lot.
However, what usually gets left out of that conversation is the later, far more rigorous meta-analysis conducted by Church and colleagues in 2018.
Oh, okay.
And that study directly addressed this exact critique.
Right. So they wanted to isolate just the active ingredient.
Yes.
They wanted to know if hitting the specific acupressure points was doing anything beyond the benefit of just sitting there and focusing on your breathing.
Exactly. They systematically broke down studies where the control group performed the exact same cognitive scripts.
The same talking.
The exact same exposure therapy. Yeah. But instead of tapping the proper clinical points, the control group either engaged in deep diaphragmatic breathing or tapped on genuinely inert sham points.
And what did they find?
The meta-analysis demonstrated that the acupressure component is indeed a highly active ingredient.
Oh, really?
Yes. The groups performing actual clinical EFT had significantly stronger and faster clinical outcomes than the active control groups.
So to make sense of the doll study, because the exposure therapy and the cognitive reframing are valid psychological tools on their own, the people tapping on the doll did feel a bit better.
Right. They were still doing CBT, essentially.
But hitting the actual mechanoreceptors on the face and torso provides a measurable, statistically significant boost that actually accelerates the healing process.
That is the crucial takeaway.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
It is also important to highlight a systemic challenge in how we evaluate these trials, though.
What kind of challenge?
Well, we use standard medical bias scoring systems that were originally designed for pharmaceutical trials.
Right, like double-blind pill studies.
Exactly. In a drug trial, you can easily blind the doctor. They don't know if they are handing the patient the real pill or a sugar pill.
Which guarantees a low risk of bias.
Yes. But in psychotherapy research, you absolutely cannot blind a therapist to the fact that they are delivering EFT.
Right. The practitioner obviously knows they at payment.
Exactly. And this inherent reality artificially inflates the risk of bias scores on standard medical rubrics.
So it makes these psychological trials look less rigorous on paper than they actually are in practice.
Precisely.
That makes total sense. You can't secretly deliver therapy to someone.
You really can't.
So with EFT, the mechanism is relatively tangible. We have physical pressure on the skin combined with verbal scripts driving these physiological changes.
Yes.
But this brings up a massive hurdle. What if we take away the physical touch and the talking entirely?
Moving into pure energy therapies.
Right. If we look at pure biofield energy therapies like Reiki, practitioners aren't even making physical contact.
Usually just hovering their hands, yes.
How can hovering hands possibly achieve similar drops in anxiety?
The great question. To understand the hypothesis behind Reiki, we have to look at how the body generates its own fields.
Okay.
We know from standard cardiology that the human heart generates an electromagnetic field that can actually be measured by an EKG from several feet away from the body.
Right, the heart's electrical activity.
So biofield therapies operate on the theory that a trained practitioner can utilize focused intention to regulate their own nervous system into a deep state of calm.
Okay.
And then, through proximity, entrain the patient's nervous system into a similar parasympathetic rest and digest state.
So it's a bit like two tuning forks.
That's a great analogy.
If you strike one and bring it close to a second one, the sound waves will cause the second one to start vibrating at the exact same frequency.
Right.
The practitioner is acting as the regulated tuning fork.
That is the proposed theoretical mechanism, yes. And this brings us to the empirical data in the 2024 meta-analysis published in BMC Palliative Care.
Right, the really recent one.
Yes. They looked at 13 independent studies involving 824 adult patients to see if this biofield entrainment actually reduced clinical anxiety.
And, you know, despite how intangible hovering hands might sound to the skeptic, the findings were incredibly robust.
They really were. The analysis found that Reiki demonstrated a significant therapeutic effect on anxiety,
yielding a standardized mean difference of negative 0.82.
Exactly.
Let's translate that metric for the listener. A standardized mean difference, or SMD, is a way to compare results across different types of anxiety scales. The negative number just means the anxiety went down, which is obviously what we want. And just like the Cohen's D earlier, an SMD of 0.8 is considered a large clinical effect.
It is. And the data revealed some very specific patterns about when this works best, too.
Oh, like what?
Reiki was particularly effective in short bursts, perhaps 1 to 3 sessions, or moderate blocks of 6 to 8 sessions.
Okay.
It really shined for patients dealing with chronic conditions.
So we are talking about individuals managing fibromyalgia or clinical depression.
Yes, and procedure-specific anxiety.
Like the intense acute fear someone might experience right before going in for a gastrointestinal endoscopy.
Spot on. That procedural anxiety responds very well.
But let's look at the limitations in this 2024 data, because we have to be honest, it wasn't a magic wand for everything.
No, definitely not.
The research clearly showed Reiki was significantly less effective for highly acute existential stress.
Yes, that was a clear finding.
It failed to produce major results for preoperative anxiety before life-threatening surgeries, and it didn't mitigate death-related anxiety in late-stage cancer patients.
Right.
So if the biofield tuning fork works for an endoscopy, why doesn't it work for major pre-op fear? Is there a biological limit to what our bodies can absorb?
What's fascinating here is it likely comes down to the sheer overwhelming nature of the patient's pathophysiological state.
Meaning the level of stress is just too high.
Essentially, yes. When a person is facing a routine, albeit uncomfortable, procedure like an endoscopy, their anxiety is procedural. It's a temporary acute spike of fear.
Okay.
Reiki appears to act on the parasympathetic nervous system to effectively calm that specific spike down.
It basically takes the edge off a temporary threat.
Yes. But when a patient is confronting a major invasive cardiovascular surgery or facing their own mortality with late-stage cancer, their physiological and psychological state is entirely overloaded by existential distress.
Right, that is a completely different level of trauma.
The severity of the trauma and the chemical cascade of stress are simply too massive for a few sessions of light-touch biofield therapy to override.
Makes sense.
It proves that Reiki isn't some mystical cure-all, but rather a targeted tool best utilized for specific nervous system states.
So what does this all mean?
That's the big question.
Now that we know both EFT tapping and Reiki have serious empirical backing for their specific use cases, how should you, the listener, actually integrate them?
Right, practical application.
Yeah. Do you abandon traditional gold standard therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy entirely, or do they somehow work together?
They absolutely work together.
I'm trying to picture this. Is CBT like rewriting the underlying code of a bad software program while energy healing is just temporarily turning down the volume on the error notifications?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the software analogy only tells half the story.
Okay, how so?
The research has compared EFT and CBT directly in several clinical trials. For instance, studies on severe food cravings and clinical depression found that EFT works equally as well as CBT in reducing symptoms.
Equally well. That is impressive.
But where EFT often excels is in the speed of the results.
Right. The data showed that practitioners using EFT were often resolving complex PTSD in 10 sessions or fewer.
Yes.
That is an incredibly rapid timeline for trauma resolution.
It really is. Yep. And we must remember, you don't actually have to choose between rewriting the code and turning down the volume, because EFT fundamentally contains CBT.
Wait, really? How does it contain it?
The cognitive reframing portion of the setup statement in tapping is essentially a CBT exercise.
Oh, I see.
It is rewriting the code while simultaneously using the physical acupressure to turn down the nervous system's volume. It is an integrated therapy, not a competing one.
And the accessibility factor is huge here, too. Traditional therapy requires scheduling an appointment weeks in advance.
Traveling to a clinic, taking time off work.
Yeah, and bearing a significant financial cost.
Absolutely. Energy therapies like Reiki and EFT are incredibly potent adjunct tools precisely because of that accessibility.
They are incredibly low risk, right?
They are completely cost-free once you learn the techniques. And they have absolutely zero side effects compared to pharmacological drugs.
Right.
For someone with severe clinical depression, they may absolutely need the heavy lifting of formal CBT with a licensed professional.
Of course.
But EFT acts as the active recovery they can do at home between sessions to regulate their own nervous system.
And we are seeing that empowerment scale massively through technology, actually.
Yes, the apps are huge now.
The 2022 Systematic Review highlighted the scale of app-based delivery. They analyzed data from the Tapping Solution app, which had a user base of over 270,000 people.
That's a massive sample size.
Right. And across those hundreds of thousands of users, they documented an average 44% reduction in anxiety and stress symptoms just from people tapping along with their smartphones.
That is a massive public health impact, and it's entirely self-directed. So to synthesize everything we've unpacked today, the evidence firmly indicates that energy healing techniques for anxiety can no longer be dismissed as anecdotal or fringe pseudoscience.
No, the numbers are just too strong.
We have 56 randomized controlled trials for EFT demonstrating massive systemic drops in cortisol.
We have a rigorous 2024 meta-analysis proving Reiki's significant impact on chronic and procedural anxiety.
The clinical data overwhelmingly supports their ability to tangibly calm the autonomic nervous system.
We want to thank you, the listener, for coming on this deep dive with us to look past the stigma.
It is not always easy to challenge our preconceived notions about what clinical medicine is supposed to look like.
Especially when the answers sound so unconventional.
It requires a willingness to follow the data, even when it leads us to our own fingertips.
Spot on. And we want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over.
Something beyond the standard anxiety stats.
Exactly. The research we looked at today showed that a single hour of tapping didn't just drop cortisol levels.
No, it did a lot more.
It actually altered the expression of 72 different genes.
Including those heavily linked to immunity and neuroplasticity.
So if just using our fingertips and our focused attention can literally change how our DNA expresses itself in 60 minutes, what other innate self-healing mechanisms are lying dormant in our bodies just waiting for us to figure out the right sequence?